Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right, good morning and welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts, good morning. It is September the 28th, 2022. And today we got a great special guest on. It is Bob Berkowitz.
Barakowitz.
Barakowitz.
Barakowitz, you got
That's
it.
A big challenge already.
It is.
Well, we're going to talk about college, and obviously I haven't gone, or I'd have probably nailed that name a little better, but how you doing, Bob?
Doing all right today.
So pull the microphone up a little bit.
It's a good day today.
Yeah, I can't get your name right, and you can't get close enough to the mic.
We're here now.
Well, listen, Rob West, gotta love Rob West. That guy is just, he's got his toe in everything, which I appreciate. I just had a guy on, Sean Roach, who he also suggested, which I love. He's doing his own clothing line, and he sent me your name, and you know, it's to learn about going to college. You know, I have a 17-year-old who's, I was just laughing. He just sent me an email that he wants to go to Johns Hopkins, and he sent me the Johns Hopkins calculator for me to be able to calculate if he can afford, or if I can afford for him to go there. I'm sure the calculations are going to show no.
Probably.
But I thought it would be nice to have you on, and you and I shared with you before. I don't know anything about this stuff. I had opportunities to go to college. I chose not to take them until later in life, until I had a little more skin in the game. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't a great candidate for college at a young age. I just was too immature. I had no idea. And some people I think are a little bit better programmed for what they want to do or have an idea. I didn't. And
well, I can tell you that there's a lot of stress and anxiety when it comes to this kind of planning.
Yeah,
people are not aware of what's available to them and what they can do to get the most out of this college experience.
Right.
Sometimes I say I make people cry. Uh-huh. And the reason that I make people cry is because it's tears of joy.
Yeah.
Because I'm taking that stress and that anxiety of FAFSA. FAFSA season's coming up. It's October 1st. That's when you're going to start filling out. If they're seniors, that's when they're going to start filling out their free application for federal student aid.
Federal student aid. And what's the acronym again?
FAFSA.
FAFSA.
F-A-F-S-A.
F-A-F-S-A.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so that starts when?
October 1st. That's when it opens up. And that's when you can first put in for 2023.
Wow. Well, it is big pressure. And that's why I thought it'd be great to have you on so we can learn some stuff.
I had somebody crying last night.
Yeah.
I mean, what they told me is that it's like I'm holding their hand and walking them through this whole experience. They're not alone anymore.
Right. Well, and you know, and we won't get into a lot of the other side of it, but there is a lot of, you know, pressure because people, in my generation, we grew up, if you didn't go to college, what happened? You dug ditches or you worked at McDonald's, right? That was the two terms that always were said to me, McDonald's and dig ditches. And we've come through this thing now where people aren't, you know, we're not going to be punished like that anymore. It was like, you don't go to college, you're basically going to be punished.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're all okay with it. And don't cry about it because that was a choice you made. And it's starting, you know, whether when the pandemic started or we've come out of it, but there's a change. And kids are starting to have thoughts and feelings and concerns. And they're not as much, I don't think, as sold on the passive-aggressive sort of atmosphere that I think I grew up in. And so it's unfortunate because they shouldn't be too stressed out about it. And it's such an early age to make such a big decision.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a parent that had twins last night. And one is super athletic,
yeah,
gymnast, but not with, and has dyslexia.
Okay.
Struggles with tests. So it doesn't have good test scores.
Right.
And the other one is just the opposite. Good test taker, high SAT scores, high ACT scores, and is already looking to apply early for college and has money coming from Widener and Muhlenberg that they're looking for her. They want her to come. So yeah, they're offering her a considerable amount of money to do that. So we work with people that are rich. We work with people that are poor. We work with students that have great test-taking abilities and students that have terrible test-taking skills.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, my son got a 1,200 on his SAT, mm-hmm. and somebody's telling me that ain't good enough. And I was like, I would have loved to have had a 1,200 on anything, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just so proud of my son and all my kids, but to get a 1,200, and then he was like, it's not good enough. He was taking courses to try to improve his score. Right. And I'm like,
Well, I can tell you that if he does improve his score, there are better chances for him to get into more different colleges.
That's a shame because he's a freaking great kid, and he's mm-hmm. you know, he takes care of his business. He runs track. He gets straight. He gets his grade average is higher than a 4.0.
Right.
I don't know how that works, but it is.
Well, they take AP courses, IB courses, and that's added on to their grade point average.
He shows up for school every day. He's got a great attitude, and mm-hmm. I'm like, this kid would be a perfect candidate for any college. Should welcome this kind of kid, and he's sitting there worried that a 1,200 isn't good enough.
That's the other pressure, you know. Besides the parents having pressure for the financial side, the kids have the pressure about getting into the schools that they want to get into.
Right.
And sad to say, some of them are not going to get into the schools that they really want to get into. They don't have the right tests. They don't have the test scores. They don't have the right grade point average. And we have to help those people.
Yeah.
We have to relieve that stress and that anxiety, both from the kid's side and from the parent's side.
Yeah. Well, I know as a parent that doesn't have a lot of money, it's, you know, I want to help him, but I also know that there's only certain things I can do. Well, we have other kids on the ship.
See, that's interesting that you say that, because let's just talk a little bit about the parents' financial situation.
Sure.
Let's take someone. I'm gonna give you an absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's handle absurdities.
Let's say that you have a business.
Yeah.
And you have less than 100 employees.
Okay.
Okay. The business is worth $10 million.
Okay.
That does not count against you. You don't put that down as one of your assets.
Right.
Okay. I was talking to a farmer, has 2,000 acres. He lives on the farm. What's that farm worth with 2,000 acres?
Right.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
Guess what? He's living on the farm. It doesn't count against him for FAFSA.
Oh, what you're saying is and it's a great point, because a lot of people think that if you own a business with 100 employees and it's worth $10 million, that's $10 million that you have a free checkbook to write from.
That's right.
That's not the case. I own a business. I own a hair salon. I remember calling my buddy Matt. I'm like, I got $4,000 in the bank. He's like, well, have you paid this and this? And I was like, no. And he goes, you don't really have any money. And that was early on. And now as a business, I'm actually an employee. I get a paycheck.
Right.
So there is no, you know, there's, you know, I don't have a lot of money, and I only earn what I make.
Right. So that's the absurdity of it. But when you go down to the family that is poor,
yeah,
and has, let's take someone who has less than $50,000 of income. I'm working with someone up in the Philadelphia area that has a disability.
Okay.
Living on a disability pension and doesn't have any money saved, and also has twins, by the way. This is unusual that I'm working with two families right now that have twins. That person is going to qualify for a lot of financial aid.
Okay.
It's almost going to be a free ride. Okay, it's not exactly a free ride, but it's going to be close to it.
So because of the twins, or the $50,000?
Because of the $50,000.
Okay.
Because of the $50,000. And no assets.
Yeah.
Okay. She has a small pension and she has a small savings account, and that's it. So that person's going to get a lot of financial aid. Now you take the middle class, okay? The middle class is the one that gets hurt the most, especially if they don't know how to fill out the FAFSA form correctly and if they don't have someone walking them through this process. If they're on their own, okay, they don't know the five areas that I help people,
Where could someone find, where would they go to find this FAFSA form?
Studentaid.gov.
Okay, studentaid.gov. Yeah. And you can go there and you'll start seeing.
Or just type in FAFSA, F-A-F-S-A.
Okay.
It'll come up.
All right.
And like I said, October 1st is the first time that the students and parents can start filling that form out for 2023.
Okay. All right. So go check it out. So you wrote down five things, and I think when I looked at those five things, I thought if we can get through those five things, people are going to learn something about this.
Oh, they're going to learn a lot today.
So why don't we just get to it and start teaching and see if we can help some people, and I'm just going to let you talk and listen, because I told you, I don't know anything about this. I have really had you on because I'm at the point, I need you, Bob. Right.
So
I need you.
Let's talk about schools with most gifting.
Okay.
That's the first place that I help them. I want to know what the student is, where the student is at, and what kind of schools they're thinking about going to.
Okay.
That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is if you're in a financial situation and you want to know which schools are going to give you the most gifting, that's where I can come in. I have all of the formulas for all of the schools. There's 3,300 universities and colleges in the United States. Okay. I have all the formulas for all the colleges, and I can plug that into my system and come up with the schools that give the most gifting. The family that I was working with last night, they had picked schools that had very low gifting. 23%, 25%.
That would be us, right? That'd be my son.
Yeah.
The school he wants has zero gifting. Can I just put this, can I read off your card?
Sure.
So that people can find, so you are, it's responsiblecollege.com.
Right.
And
on the bottom there, you can go to responsiblecollege.com/Bob - Barakowitz.
Barakowitz.
And I'll spell my last name. It's B-U-R-A-K-I-E-W-I-T-Z. CZ.
I was actually looking at it to make sure you got it
nice
right.
Nice easy name.
Well, so yeah, because I usually we wait to the end, but if someone's listening to this podcast, I think they need to go and check out your site and go see some of the stuff that you're offering.
Yeah.
So it's real quick. It's responsiblecollege.com/Bob Barakiewicz.
You got it.
All right, Bob.
So schools with gifting, most. And let's talk about in-state public schools.
Okay.
Let's take a school like Delaware State.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to use $30,000 as the cost of attendance. So don't go looking at what the tuition is, because that's not the answer. You got to look at what the cost of attendance is, because that's the tuition plus room and board, meal plans, all of those extra items that are added on to that. That's really the cost of attendance. So when you look at the cost of attendance for a school like Dell State, you might be looking at somewhere around $30,000.
Okay? A year.
A year.
Okay.
Okay. They have a 25% gifting. Let's make it 30% because it's an easy number to work with. Okay?
Right.
So that means that if you go there, the cost of attendance is $30,000.
Okay.
If your expected family contribution, and that's what you find out when you fill out the FAFSA form.
Okay.
They will tell you what your expected family contribution is. And it's a family number, not a student number. What that means is if you do have twins, that number gets split between the two children.
Mm.
So if it's a $15,000 expected family contribution, and you subtract that from the $30,000 for the cost of attendance, you're left with another $15,000, which is called the remaining need.
Okay.
Okay.
So you say twins because they would both go at the same time.
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So if you take a look at, and it doesn't have to be twins. Let's say that you have one child that's 18.
Can we just use my son as a scenario,
sure.
A 17-year-old senior.
So let's assume that he goes to Dell State. $30,000 cost of attendance, $15,000 for expected family contribution, leaving $15,000 of remaining need.
Okay.
If the school has a 30% gifting program, you're going to get 30% of that $15,000. That's the remaining need. So they will give you $4,500.
Okay.
Okay. That still leaves $11,500.
Yeah.
So the cost to go to that school, Dell State, is the $11,500 that was left over after gifting and the $15,000. So it's going to cost you $26,500 to go to Dell State.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
If you pick a school like Yale,
okay,
Yale's a 90% gifting school.
Okay, how about Johns Hopkins?
90%.
Because David wants to go to Johns Hopkins.
Sure. So let's talk about that. I don't know exactly what the tuition is there, but let's say that it's a $60,000 school because I'm going to double the tuition. And if it's a 90% gifting school, what does that mean? Well, you still have the same FAFSA, or when you did FAFSA, they gave you the expected family contribution. It's the same whether you go to Yale, John Hopkins, or whether you go to Del State.
Okay.
It's the same expected family contribution. So now it's $15,000 subtracted from the cost of attendance of John Hopkins, and I'm going to assume $60,000. So what does that leave? That leaves $45,000.
Mm.
Okay, that's a big number.
Big.
But they're going to give you 90%.
Okay.
So 90% of 45,000, 41,500, if my math is correct. Sometimes I'm a little off, but that's all right. It's for illustrative purposes.
This sounds very positive.
It is positive.
This is good news, Bob.
It is good news. So what you'll see is that because the school has the extra gifting percentage,
mm-hmm.
it'll cost you less to go to John Hopkins than it does to go to Del State. People don't understand this.
No, and even though you just explained to me, I'm still a little foggy.
Right. So normally what I would be doing is I would be writing these numbers down.
Right.
People would be seeing these numbers, and I would go very, very slow in explaining it. I just want to get this point across. It's all about your expected family contribution and the gifting that the school gives you.
So the gifting is basically against your family contribution.
No, the gifting is against the remaining need.
The remaining need family contribution.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So you always find out what your expected family contribution is, subtract it from the cost of attendance, and that's the remaining need.
Okay.
Now, these gifting percentages are not published.
Right.
You cannot find out what these schools are gifting. We purchase this every year, and we have all the gifting percentages for all the different schools.
Okay.
So no matter what school you want to go to, we can help you.
That's valuable in the service that you're doing.
Especially if it's early in the game.
Right.
The best time for me to work with someone is when they're a freshman in high school.
Right.
Okay? Not that I can't help seniors.
Right.
But the best time is when they're freshmen, because we have time to do that planning process over the 4 years of high school.
Yeah, but isn't it it's such a tough time to be making such a, I guess I look at college as like, I pick a college and this is going to be my career. And I guess I really forget the fact that you can spend a few years in college just getting a lot of the basic stuff out of the way. You know, maybe, I don't know, when do you finally pick, you know, determine what you want to be? You know, it's probably a few years down the line, but, you know, I just imagine you walk in and say, I want to be a doctor, and then it's all doctor from there on out. And it's really not the case.
That's one of the areas that we help people with. We help the students become career ready.
Okay.
Okay. I wasn't going to talk about that yet, but I'll jump into it right now.
I'm sorry, Bob.
That's all right. No. Career ready means that when they're a senior, especially if we're working with them from when they're a freshman,
right.
they know pretty much what they want to do. They have a pretty good path to follow. And so that when the average graduation takes 6.5 years.
Six and a half years of college.
So if the student knows that this is the path that they're following, they normally take 4 years.
Okay.
So we're going to lessen the time that the student is in school, and we're going to help the family financially because they don't have to pay for that extra 2.5 years.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, career ready, what does that mean? If you Google...
Do you want me to Google it?
No, no. Oh. If you write down.
Okay.
Okay. Students using LinkedIn.
Okay, students.
You're going to come up with many ways that high school students and college students are using this tool. It's a networking tool.
Right.
I had a sophomore in high school going down to the University of Georgia. I'm sorry, Georgia Tech. It was Georgia Tech. He was going down to Georgia Tech for an engineering conference. High school sophomore.
Right.
Okay. So we gave him a task. Join LinkedIn. Okay. Find out who the speakers are going to be at this conference. Connect with them before you go down there. So that when you get there, you can now, you're already following them. You're already connected to them. You can now start posting about their presentations that they're making at the conference.
Okay.
So you're promoting them.
Right.
Okay. So the student did that. He comes home. We had him handwrite thank you notes to all the speakers. and all the professors that he met.
Right.
Okay. So now.
Personable.
Personable.
Yep. We forgot how to do that.
So we're networking.
Yeah.
And we're thanking people. Now he's back in high school. Junior year goes by. Senior year goes by. And he decides he wants to go to Georgia Tech. So he writes asks the people that he met at Georgia Tech when he was a sophomore if they would please write a letter of recommendation. Now, he's been talking and networking with these people for 2 years, 3 years now. So what's the chances of them writing a letter of recommendation for him to go to Georgia Tech? Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. So that's one thing. There's 14 other ways that we help the students become career ready. Internships, do a day of following. If they're interested in, let's say, being a podcast host.
Okay.
They would come into the studio and they would follow you for a day to see what you're doing as far as podcasts are concerned.
I think the word we're looking for is willingness. And, you know, these are the things, you know, because you can make a suggestion, but some people aren't always willing or have the willingness to do some of these, you know, handwriting thank you notes. I mean, this is like mature kind of thinking. And
well, that's what we have to help them become.
Listen, I agree. I think it's awesome. I mean, I love waving the white flag. It's like, you know, we can have a stance like, oh, I don't want to do all that. It's like,
So here's another homework assignment.
Okay.
Google motivating students.
Okay, so I got students using LinkedIn. Now what's my next one?
Motivating students.
Motivating students, all right.
Now, some students are self-motivated, and they don't need the Google motivating students, okay? But there are a lot of students out there that need that little push.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's what this is. I always recommend, as part of a ADHD group that I follow, okay, one of the things that they recommend doing is having a weekly review of the student's activities. So whether it's a counselor, whether it's a mentor, or whether it's a parent, or if it's a self-motivated student, they could do it themselves. They would do a weekly review. And basically what they would say is, how did I do this week?
Yeah.
Did I make any mistakes? What am I proud of that I did this week? What am I going to do next week to improve?
Yeah.
Do I have any tests coming up? Am I prepared for those tests?
This seems almost daily.
I do a daily review.
Listen, when I don't do something correctly, I really need to do it because right. I need to move it out of there. I need to figure out what I need. Willingness, right? It's all about willingness and, you know, clean it up and move on.
That's right.
But I, you know, a week is good, but I know as an adult, I definitely need, it's almost minute by minute.
Today, I'm doing a quarterly review.
Okay.
Okay. My quarter is up now. We're going to start a new quarter. So what did I accomplish this quarter and how am I going to move forward?
Right.
Do I have to make any changes? Okay. So instead of waiting for the end of the year to do an annual review and see how I did, I do it weekly. I do it daily, then I do it weekly, then I do it monthly. And now that the quarter is here, I'm doing a quarterly review for myself.
I love it.
And I want the students that I work with, that's what I want to see them doing because they're going to have a life-changing experience when they do that.
Yeah.
It's nothing that the school's not teaching that. The parents don't know about that. The students don't know about that. But there's a lot of YouTube videos that you can look at that talk about motivating students.
Well, and I think it's a different way of accountability as well. I mean, you can be accountable to yourself or somebody can call you out on your accountability. And I think being more accountable to yourself and working something like whether it's a weekly or every day. But, you know, it's better to be called out by yourself than have somebody else calling you out. Right. And I think, you know, unfortunately, it takes a couple times where it happens and you're like, oh my God, that felt terrible. And we start to become better at it. But yeah, willingness and accountability, I think big deals, right?
Right, always. So we've talked about two things so far. Schools with the most gifting.
Yeah.
And becoming career ready.
Well, we also talked about that October 1st is the beginning of the...
Yeah, FAFSA.
FAFSA.
That's right, FAFSA. FAFSA is... and by the way, the clients that I work with, they do not submit the FAFSA form without me reviewing it.
Okay.
So I always tell them, before you hit that submit button, send that to me.
Right.
I want to find if there's any mistakes on there. Okay. 9 out of 10 FAFSA forms that I look at have mistakes.
Mm.
9 out of 10.
That's not good. Yeah.
And that could be a little, just a little thing like not checking the box about work study programs.
Right.
Okay. There could be big things. For instance, one person that I looked at had $300,000 in a 401k. So the question on a FAFSA form is, what investments do you have? So they put down $300,000 because that's what they had in their retirement account.
Right.
FAFSA specifically excludes retirement money. So you don't even have to put that down.
Yeah, because it's not like you just don't pull money out of a 401k.
But here's the penalty.
Okay.
5.67% of that $300,000 would have been taken away from financial aid. Let's round it off to 6%. That's $18,000 per year that they would have lost in financial aid had they continued on with that form the way that it was. That's significant.
That's okay. Very significant.
So it can be a little minor thing like a checkbox, but it could be a big thing like putting an asset down that you don't have to put down.
Right.
Okay. So that's the FAFSA form. Micro scholarships. Somebody might want to write this down. There's a micro scholarship out there called RAISE, R-A-I-S-E, RAISE, like lift up, .me. There's 450.
R-A-I-S-E dot M-E.
Dot me, right. That is the website.
Okay.
And again, for seniors, they have to sign up by October 1st.
So we just had you. We're right there.
We're right there. Both for FAFSA and for these micro scholarships.
Okay.
Micro scholarships are not based on anything that the parent does. It's based on what the student does.
Okay.
For instance, if a school is offering $500 if they got an A, you just got $500 for tuition.
Do schools do that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the reason that they do it is because they want you to consider going to that school.
Sure.
So they can pick 10 schools to follow and submit their information. The information is grades. The information is activities at school, extracurricular activities outside of school, work. All of these count towards micro scholarships.
Okay.
If you look at USA Today had an article a few years back about a student that got $80,000 in micro scholarships.
Wow.
That's $20,000 a year for 4 years.
Wow.
Okay. For a senior at this late date to get that much would be very difficult. But they can go retroactive to when they were freshmen and start adding that information in.
Okay.
But they have to sign up in the next 3 days, today, tomorrow, well, no, 2 days because the 30th is coming.
So that's at raise.me?
Raise.me.
Raise, R-A-I...
S-E.
No, R-A-I, yeah, R-A-I-S-E dot M-E.
Dot me.
Yeah, right. So we'll put all this in the description of the...
Right.
Because I'm going to post this today.
Okay.
This is important.
So raise.me is a micro scholarship site.
Now, micro scholarship site.
Right. Now, here's one thing. Did you know that you can negotiate with schools?
No.
Well, you can.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say that the student decides to go to a school that is not part of that program.
Okay.
We can then write a letter to the school that they are going to go to and say, listen, my student has an offer of 6,000, 10,000, whatever the number is, from XYZ school. We really want to go to your school. However, this financial aid that they're offering us is pretty much of an incentive that we want to go. We might be going there. Can you do anything as far as this financial aid for us? Can you increase it?
Okay.
And you can. They will.
So letting
if
them,
they want that student.
So letting them know that maybe a potential other college is interested.
That's right.
There's like, okay, well, listen, it's...
Parents don't know that.
It's like the NFL.
Parents don't know that.
I love it.
Okay.
So you can negotiate. So I guess what you're saying is if you're trying to get into another school, you can let them know what another school is going to offer, and that sometimes may help in getting the price down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or so getting other
incentives.
Not
the price down, but getting more financial aid.
More financial aid, right.
Okay. So that was micro scholarships. We recommend that the students take out loans. The reason for that is because the years that they're in school, they're not paying anything back, and they're not being charged any interest. I'm sorry, right. They're not paying any interest. When they graduate school, it's 6 years after they 6 months after they graduate that they have to start paying back. So in the first year, they'll get $5,500 in student loans. The second year, $6,500. The third and fourth year, they'll get $7,500.
Okay.
Okay?
And where does that come from?
That comes from the federal government.
Okay.
Okay? And through the different lenders that they're associated with.
Okay.
Okay? So the student loans are good if there's a strategy to pay them back. They're bad if they don't. The average to pay back a student loan is 18 and a half years.
Right.
Okay? So when they graduate at 22, 20, whatever the age is, 18 years later, they're now 40 years old and they're finally paying off their student loan. We help students pay off student loans in 5 years.
Okay.
Okay? They're done after 5 years.
So what you're saying is that, if, like my son, he can apply through the federal government for a student loan.
Correct.
And you say the first year
now
is...
Now, listen to this. I mean, an 18-year-old getting $27,000 to $30,000 just on by a signature.
No, I know.
Do you know why? That's why we have $18 trillion in student debt today.
Right.
$18. There are still 300,000 people who are retired that are having their Social Security garnished because they haven't paid off their student
loans. See, this is what I don't want to happen. That is what I do not want to happen.
That's why we have to have a plan. There has to be a strategy. It
yes.
can't just be take loans and hope that you pay them off in 18 and a half years. You take the loans with a strategy to pay them off when you graduate, whether it be a side hustle, whatever it is, we will help them.
I'm hoping through this conversation we figure out how not to have much student loan at all.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because a lot of times when we have a 14-page report that we present to the parents.
Right.
And a lot of times under their current strategy, not only are they taking student loans, but they're also taking parent loans.
Hmm.
Okay? A lot of times we eliminate the parent loans.
Okay.
We don't like to eliminate the student loans because I don't want to say it's free money, but it's money that they can utilize, the parents can utilize for their own investments, for their own retirement.
Now, clearly we come out of school with different types of education. I'm imagining a student loan for a doctor would be a little different than a student loan for a, you know, a business owner.
Yeah. There's a book out there that's called The Myth of the Rich Doctor.
I know doctors, and I believe me, the struggle is real.
I have a 57-year-old doctor that I'm working with that still has $300,000 in student loans.
Right.
Okay. Still has $300,000.
And probably working his rear end off.
He is. Okay. So, yes, there are doctors out there that are very rich and they charge an awful lot for their services.
Sure.
But there are other doctors that aren't at that high level.
No.
You know, you take the family doctor, it's not the same thing as a knee surgeon.
Right.
Okay? Completely different income levels and specialties. So The Myth of the Rich Doctor is an interesting book to read, talking about, you know, how these people are carrying an awful lot of debt.
Right. When you want to be a doctor, I think that's sort of calculated in as your income. Is like, oh well, you'll probably make this, but you're still going to be making your student loan. So this, yeah. I think it's like 55. I think I forget what the formula was, but I think around 55 years old, done correctly, you might actually get things paid off and start actually really reaping the benefits from being an actual doctor.
Mm-hmm. So I talked about the 300,000 people that still have, oh, I'm sorry, that are being garnished. Their Social Security is being garnished because they haven't paid back their student loans. There are still 2 million people, 2 million people that are paying student loans after they retire.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not actually that big of a number, to be honest. 2 million anymore, it seems like it's just...
I'm glad I'm not one of them.
Yeah, me too. I agree.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
So
I think I get your point.
So we're going to help them pay off their student loans in 5 years.
Right. Okay.
Rather than 18 and a half years.
When I'm sort of using my son as an example in his journey so far. You know, we went up to Johns Hopkins and it was interesting. There was only two kids there at the tour. One was from Paris. Two were, no, it was four kids. Two were from Paris. One was from Seattle, and then my son from Rehoboth. I mean, and they, in the kind of in the spiel sort of thing that they kind of do, they said that they prefer their students to leave school with zero student loans.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how that works. I'm not sure. I guess if you can check all the boxes and get into that school, I guess once you're in, they're very on board on trying to help you not have student loans.
It's a good talking point.
Okay.
It depends on the finances of the parent. It depends on what the student wants to do. But again, financially, and I'm talking about as a financial planner or a college planner, I think the loans are good for the student.
Okay.
And for the parent. Because that's money that, remember, that's like $27,000 to $30,000 that's in the parent's pocket while they're going to school.
Interest-free.
Well, they're charging interest, but it's accruing, and they'll pay it back after they graduate.
Okay.
But the thing that I want to point out is that you have now $30,000 that you can invest over that four-year period of time.
Okay.
You personally.
Okay.
Okay. So how does that grow? How much does that grow, and what does that mean to your retirement?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree.
So we've talked about...
Sorry, there was somebody getting ready to walk in the door. I think they thought we were at the breakfast place. I didn't mean to lose you there, but I was like, don't come in. Go ahead.
So we talked about schools with the most gifting. We talked about the free application for federal student aid. We talked about micro scholarships. We talked about paying off loans. And we talked about being career ready. I want to talk a little bit about my team.
Okay.
John Boschoven is a former president of the National Association of Guidance Counselors.
Okay.
He's part of my team. I can reach out to him anytime and ask him questions about admissions, whatever. And he is there available for me. And he's also available for as a consultant to the parents.
Well, we need to make it clear. You know, Rob West suggested you come on the podcast. I love, you know, these conversations I learn. But the reality is you have a service, and you provide it for kids getting ready to go to college.
Right.
And that's, we're also here to promote that. So, and I will probably be using you, and you just fell out of heaven for me. But we have to remind everybody, you provide a service, and you have a team of people that helps create that, make that service even better.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And let me talk about the cost of it.
Yeah.
We are a community resource. We do not charge for the work that we do. We work through the Heartland Institute of Financial Education. It's a 501c3 nonprofit.
Okay.
And because of that, we have the ability to not charge anything for the work that we do.
Okay.
So whether we're working with a student and his family, whether we're working with a school or a college, there's no cost to any of them.
Okay. Thank you.
So I want to talk about another person on my team, Jermaine Chaney, former Indianapolis Colt football player.
Okay.
Consultant to the Big Ten. Okay. Anytime that I have a student that is gifted enough to consider a sports scholarship, I have them talk with Jermaine.
Okay.
Because he will give them the down low on sports scholarships.
Right.
And it's funny. I think it's only like 4% of students get a full ride.
Yeah.
That's not a big number.
No.
Okay. So these are the kinds of people that I'm pulling to the table.
And it's probably a great conversation. I've, you know, in my business, I've heard, you know, I have a lot of conversations, and I've heard several times of kids, whether they got a half ride, partial ride, but they get to school on this ride,
right,
and they're like, whoa, because it's like, it's business. This sports, you know,
it's
whether it's
business.
Lacrosse or track or swimming, but it's a lot of practice, and for some people, it's great. Some people are like, well, I'm really missing this sort of college experience because I have, you know, I'm deep into this.
Yeah, so one of the things that the parents will do is they'll take their students to showcase them at different tournaments, different events. And the schools that want those children will be offering them scholarships.
Right.
Okay. I had a student who was offered 13 different scholarships for soccer. From some good schools.
Right.
Told the parents at the last minute, I don't want to play soccer anymore.
Right.
So now what do those parents do? They were counting on that money. They were counting on those scholarships. And all of a sudden, they're in turmoil because they could come up with the money to pay for these colleges now. So when they call me, it's a pretty stressful situation where they thought they were good, and now they're not good.
Well, and that's, first of all, I think that's an amazing, mature decision by the student. I think that we put so much freaking pressure on these kids that, you know, they're so scared. You know, they're afraid to admit, I don't want to go play soccer. But I think it'd be interesting to find out what a kid that gets like a full ride or a big scholarship chunk of money, and then when they come to that situation where they don't want to play, and you come involved and figure out, well, look, we can still get free money this way, or it isn't the end of the end. You know,
it's like, not.
And then you look at it and you go, you mean, and I don't know any numbers, but, you know, you find out, wow, we could have actually, your kid can go to college on a pretty reasonable budget, and you really were counting on soccer.
Let me give you one of the strategies that we use. Community college.
Okay.
Could be a two-year community college that they are going to go to before going to a four-year college.
Right.
Okay. Or what they could do is they could use that as a way of reducing the cost of college by going in the summer for 2 years and getting 12 credits.
Right.
Okay. Think of a school like John Hopkins that's very expensive. If you talk to the admission department and you find out what kind of credits could be transferred, maybe you can take some courses during the summer that would transfer. So that helps reduce the cost, because the cost of going to community college is not the same as going to John Hopkins.
Well, and you know, I mentioned to you, so we are in Delaware.
But there's another point that I want to make there.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the summer school for community college, less expensive. That's number one. But guess what? It also doesn't count against your grade point average. So how would the grade point average, if you took the hardest courses that John Hopkins have and they were transferable, now sometimes right. They might not be, but let's say that they're transferable. How does that improve your grade point average when you graduate? Tremendously.
Right.
You're taking off three or four of the worst courses, getting, because the community college, you get a pass or fail. So it's not like you're getting 4.0.
Right.
Okay. So it helps the grade point average. Helps financially, and it helps with the grade point average. So that's the community college strategy that we use.
Yeah, and what I was going to say is that, you know, you say the word community college, and I think everybody's eyes roll in the back of their head. Like, it's not, it's, you know, and I've mentioned the SEED program, the University of Delaware SEED program. You said you didn't know a lot about it, which is great.
But I do a lot of work all over the country.
Sure, and I don't expect you to know everything about everything. But I was just going to share it. My buddy James Keegan, who runs the English department at the University of Delaware, runs the SEED program, and he says it's amazing. It's almost like 3 years of free college. You basically have to buy the books. He said the books are really all online. You don't even have to buy those, and it transfers to other colleges. But since you use the word SEED program, nobody wants to go because they think that it's not a great, you know, because it's not Johns Hopkins or it's not, you know, whatever these big colleges is. If you're like, oh, yeah, I do the SEED program at University of Delaware, they think they're not getting the education. And it's, you know, he's like, I don't understand. We have this amazing program that nobody wants to use.
Sometimes there has to be a hard discussion, both with the student and with the parents. The parents don't want to deprive the student, okay? But if they don't have the money, what are they going to do?
So there's three conversations. One's with reality.
That's right.
Because that's me. Yeah. I don't want to deprive my son of anything. But at the same time, the reality is I don't have that much money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
now think about how many people went through college working without any support from the parents because the parents just didn't have the money. So they worked while they were in college. It might have taken them a little longer to get through college, but they paid it off by working. So yeah. That's another strategy, but it's sometimes the hard reality.
Yeah. Well, what I'm learning this is find as many people as I can and ask as many questions and learn as much as I can.
Right.
And that's why I'm really grateful you're here, because I'm learning. This is awesome. And I can't wait to post this, because I think there's tons of parents out there that are probably stressed and trying to figure it out and trying to understand. So I think if we can give out some great information, like raise.me, I think that's a great place to go look and, and learn some stuff as well.
Some, you know, we work with a lot of schools around the country. At Lawrence Technological University in Southfield, Michigan, we have a program there where we meet with the parents and the students four times a year. The college brings us on campus and has us speak to the parents and the students.
Okay.
We help them matriculate, and we help them financially.
Okay.
Indiana Wesleyan. Indiana Wesleyan, if the student is doing his studies online because of this past COVID stuff that happened, they'll get a 20% discount by working through us to go to Indiana Wesleyan.
Okay.
So there are schools like that around the country that we work with. Okay. And work with high schools. We work with middle schools, getting on campus to talk to the students and the parents about this financial aid process, about this paying for college strategies. It's not about a product. It's not about a product. It's about strategies. Using the right strategies to lower the cost for the parents so that they're not going in debt for paying for college.
Right.
That's what we do.
Strategies. That's your number one goal.
Strategies.
I love that.
Okay. I talked a little about the team. There, I have the admissions counselors. I have sports counselors. I have test-taking counselors. All these people are on the team. They are not, I am not paid by them. They're not paid by me. They're paid by the parents that use them.
Okay.
But I have the resources to refer them to someone who is, what I think, some of the best in the country to do their particular coaching.
Okay.
So.
So you have you've got a lot of people in place for every situation may come up down this path to college. I mean, you know, the as far as sports goes, testing, you've covered it.
We have a good team nationwide. Think of me as a macro manager sitting around a conference room table. And I have all these other people sitting with me. And I can refer them to you. I have access to all these people. So the macro manager is looking at the big picture, taking all of the information for the students, the schools that they like, looking at the parents' financial situation, income tax returns, their investment portfolio, their retirement accounts, looking at all of that and being the macro manager that makes sure that all these puzzle pieces fit together so that they have the right strategy for their family. Each one is customized so that we can do the right job for the people that we work with.
I think it sounds awesome. I told you my son emailed me the Johns Hopkins financial calculator to see if we could afford it.
Now, let me just bring that up. All the colleges on their website have what's called a net price calculator.
Okay.
Okay. This will give you an approximation of what it will cost you to go to that school. The other thing that you want to look at is collegeboard.org.
Collegeboard.org. Okay.
All the colleges are on there, and you can find out a great deal of information about the schools. One of the things that you're going to want to know is, will my son qualify for this school? So what kind of grade point average do they take? What kind of SAT score do they take? And that'll all be on that website.
Is it true, I heard someone read somewhere that I think in 2024 they're going to stop using the SATs as a barometer for kids getting into college?
That's a good subject to talk about. Some schools are test alternative.
Okay.
Test blind. Test blind meaning they don't even care about the test.
Right.
Right now there's probably around 1,200 schools that are not counting the test scores. About 1,200 out of 3,300. So there's still 2,200 schools out there that are requiring the test scores.
Right.
But here's the point. If there's competition between one student and another student, they're going to look at that test score.
Right.
So we recommend that the student take the SATs, take the ACT.
So at a 1,200, I mean, and to me seems good, but according to other people, it's not good enough. I mean, what is a good score on an SAT, 13?
It's not going to be good for John Hopkins.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but he doesn't go to Johns Hopkins.
The University of Delaware.
The best part about it is that's his journey.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, thank you, John Hopkins, for letting us know. We won't spend our money there.
Right.
It's fine.
So those are the things that you want to look at. Will my son or daughter qualify for the school?
And the fact that they
say then you can eliminate that school.
The fact that they say that's not good enough is annoying.
Think about how many students apply to that school.
I went there. It was four kids in the auditorium.
That has nothing to do with how many kids apply.
Well, I don't know what it has to do with. I can tell you it was probably about a 500-seat auditorium, and there were four of us in there. So I don't know where the other 500 or 486 were. About.
Thousands.
Yeah, well.
Let me bring you back to that visitation.
Sure.
Okay. If anybody emails me at bob@responsiblecollege.com, okay, I will send them a visitation guide. The visitation guide is 7 pages long, and it provides the student and the parents with questions to ask when they make a formal visit. You want to make it a formal visit because, believe it or not, some schools will give you a $1,000 scholarship just for making a formal visit to that school.
Okay.
Okay. Some might even give $2,000, but it has to be a formal visit, something sure. That was it was an appointment that was made. So, give you a story about this one. The parent and the student were separated. The students were on a bus doing a little tour. The young lady had the questionnaire in front of her, and she starts asking questions of the person that was making the presentation on the bus. Other students were looking at her and saying, "Where the hell are you getting all those questions from?" And she said, "My counselor, my mentor, gave them to me. And I'm asking the questions that he told me to ask."
Right.
And so the other students that were on the bus, were now following her around campus because she had all the questions to ask. Okay. So there are questions for asking other students. There are questions there to ask admissions. There are questions there for financial aid. So the visitation guide is a value resource that we think every parent should have when they do a visit to a college.
It's funny because when we went, we didn't have a lot of questions. I'm like, "Do you have any questions?" He's like, "I don't know. Do you have any questions?" And I,
"You don't know what questions
we don't
to ask."
Yeah, I didn't know what to ask. That would be super helpful.
So if anybody wants a free visitation guide, just email me at bob@responsiblecollege.com.
I'll put that in the description.
Right.
That way we can connect.
There are other resources that I have also. The one thing that let me talk about the process.
Sure.
Okay. So when I start talking with the parent and the students, I'm not normally talking to the students initially. I'm talking to the parents, but sometimes the students get involved. I want to know what kind of schools they like.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what their grade point average is. I want to know what their test scores are. I want to know if they're planning to retake the test. Because if they can increase the test scores, they're going to get more money in financial aid and better schools, too, that they'll qualify for. So the process starts with asking questions about the student. Do they want to go in-state? Do they want to go out-of-state? Do they want a large school, a small school? Then we get on to the parents, and we talk a little about the parents and their families and what they are expecting out of this experience. And then we have to talk finances. So I want to know all of their finances. Things that they would put down on the FAFSA form anyway. Because you know why? We're going to run the FAFSA for them before they fill out the FAFSA form themselves.
Okay.
So we're going to know pretty close what their expected family contribution is. And we're going to ask them to give us 10 schools that these students want to go to.
Okay.
And we will show you the 10 schools that are going from the highest gifting to the lowest gifting. And if they choose a low gifting school, if we're early enough in the process, maybe they might consider a higher gifting school rather than a low gifting school.
Sure.
Now, the parents that I talked with last night, the student had already, one of them, because they're twins, one of them had already picked a school. The school was giving them a $33,000 scholarship. So that was a pretty good incentive to pick that school.
Right.
However, that school was a 22% gifting school compared to a 90% gifting school. But they were doing fairly well because they had a merit scholarship.
Okay.
Okay. The process continues because what we're going to do now is once I have all that information, we're going to have a second meeting. And at that second meeting, I'm going to show them a 14-page report. And it's going to be a side-by-side comparison between what they're doing now and what they could do to optimize their strategy.
Okay.
All right. So we are going to find out their strong points and their weak points and point that out to them. Right. Again, the best time to work with a family is when they're freshmen.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not that I can't help a senior.
Sure.
But typically, the best time is when they're
freshmen. Well, and I think my son said, I mean, last year was when they started. I mean, we went to Johns Hopkins last year. Mm-hmm. He was 11th grade. So right. This is, I mean, apparently 11th grade is really.
That's when you're going to start doing dissertations.
Yeah, but 11th grade, I guess, is when, you know, we started doing all that stuff. So,
and that's another point. The Department of Education has a lot of good resources. So if you go on to the Delaware Department of Education, you'll see resources for students and financial aid. The biggest thing that I can point out is that I'm taking the stress and anxiety of this planning that parents don't know about and putting them in a place where the stress and anxiety is on my shoulders.
Right.
I know what to expect.
Yeah.
We've done this for over 15 years now. Okay. The team is in place to help them. They just have to reach out and ask for help.
Well, that's, I think, and you sound like you're a great resource to reach out to.
I hope so. Like I said, I've had, there was one young lady down in North Carolina. She wanted to go to Duke University. She's wanted to go there since she was a little kid. She wanted to be a neurosurgeon. Great kid. High test scores. High grade point average, community active, does a lot of work within the community, has a job at a grocery store. She was turned down. When they told me that she was turned down, I was shocked because this is a student that I would think any school would be proud to have as a student body, part of the student body. So now we have to scramble. So we find another school.
What was the other school?
Queens College. And they offered her over $100,000 in scholarships. So it's a blessing in disguise.
Well, and, you know, we talk about Johns Hopkins. You know, it's always, sometimes I wonder, quite honestly, I don't even know where this Johns Hopkins came from. That's what you have when you have a 17-year-old kid. They're like, yeah, I want to go to Johns Hopkins. You're like, where did that ever come from? So, you know,
does he want to do something in the medical field?
Yeah, he wants to be a doctor.
Okay, well, that's why I came up.
Right, but Johns Hopkins, it's like it has a, you know, it has a note, you know, it has a it's got some shine to it, right?
I saw something the other day that one of the hospitals is in a preliminary study with the University of, I'm pretty sure it's University of Delaware, to form a medical school here in Delaware.
Wow. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to find out some more about the SEED program. I mean, maybe I'll send you some stuff on it so you have some ideas. But, you know, there are some places to. So can we set up an appointment with my son for you? Can we come? Can we have him come talk to you?
Yeah. If you scan the QR code that's on my business card that you have in your hand, you'll come up with a page that's called Meet Bob.
Okay.
Okay. It'll tell you all about me.
Okay,
it'll tell you why I do this, and really the reason I do it is because, you know, think of it as a chessboard. Okay, I was given a chessboard when I was 10 years old.
Right.
Nobody in my family played chess.
We love chess.
Nobody knew anything about it.
Will that get him into Johns Hopkins? Chess.
But so you have to know how to play the game. You have to know who the players are. You have to know the rules of the game.
Right.
Okay. Parents do not know who the players are. They don't know the rules of the game, and they don't know how the board is set up. That's where I come in for college planning. I know the rules. I know how the game is played, and I know who the players are.
Right.
And I can put it all together for them.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of that, you know, I mean, that unfortunately, I mean, it's a great service, but there are people out there that do take advantage of that. And, you know, it's you have to, you know, it's nice to have you on and meet you because it is, you seem to be a very honest person. But, you know, there are people that sort of take advantage of, and a lot of times it's parents, right? The parents are so driven to have their kids doing something that they get so caught up in it. And the kids are like, I don't know what the hell's going on, but it can be wild. So, you know, actually, the fact that I met you and you came on this podcast has brought me some relief. I'm very, you know, it's very cool because you do seem to know a lot about it. And, you know, people can get caught in, you know, you said Duke, and I'm sure, you know, I'm sure it's a great school, but it also is Duke, right? And, you know, I had
$70,000 a year.
Yeah, I had a friend sent their kids going to Ole Miss for real estate. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, I guess you can learn real estate in Ole Miss, but it seemed there might have been an easier way or a cheaper way, but, and I love it. You know, they can afford it, and I think it's great. Especially, and the other thing is when a guy like me can't afford it, I point out a lot of people that are doing great stuff, but I'm, you know, it's a little jealous. I want to give my kid the best opportunity as well.
I want to give the people the opportunity to go on my website, responsiblecollege.com/Bob-Barakowitz, which you've already mentioned. I'm hoping that you'll put that in the notes.
I just took a picture of the card. I'm going to post it on Instagram in about 5 minutes.
Okay, here's the point that I want to make. I can work with people three different ways.
Okay.
Okay. COVID was the best thing that ever happened to me. For some people and some businesses, it was the worst thing. But for me, it was the best thing. It forced me to go virtual. I work all over the country now, talking to parents from California to Maine to Florida, Texas. Mm. Doesn't matter where they are now. I can help people all over the country. If they go on that page and they look at the bottom,
okay,
the bottom there's videos that they can watch. All they have to do is put in their email address, and they'll be taken to a page where they can choose what they want to watch. It's a on-demand video choice, and it'll explain a lot of what we're talking about today.
Okay,
all those videos will explain the schools with the most gifting, the FAFSA, micro scholarships, paying off loans in 5 years rather than 18 and a half years, how to become career ready. All of that will be on there. In addition to that, it talks about the community resource and why we are a community resource and why we don't charge any money. It's all there.
Okay.
So it's...
And please check it out because, like I said, I'm not educated in this. I'm probably not asking the greatest questions and pretty, you know, but we got websites and stuff to go check out.
That's right.
So we can send them there.
Yeah. And
you know, the other thing, Bob, is as a parent, it's intimidating, right? You don't want to be the guy that doesn't know everything, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the 54-year-old raising my hand going, I don't understand, you know, because I feel when I do that, like I haven't paid attention much in my life or something. So it's intimidating. So it's nice, you know, it's a relief that I can be a little bit, you know, out of the loop on some of this, and a guy like yourself that can bring me in a little bit, and it doesn't have to feel like I need to go back to college just to figure out how to get my kid to college.
Yeah. Over the years, I've collected many YouTube videos for students to watch, parents to watch. How do you become a better student?
Are you asking me?
Sure.
Well, I think it was the true words we used, accountability and willingness.
Well, what if there was a video that you could look at from a doctor in medical school that talks about becoming a better student? There's another person. His name is Ali Abdal. So if you Google Ali, A-L-I-A-B-D-A-A-L, Ali Abdal, he has a lot of videos that talk about becoming a better student.
Nice.
How to take notes in school. Another one is Thomas Frank. Thomas Frank used to be called the college info geek. When he was in college, He was making a lot of money by producing YouTube videos on showing people how to become better students. He's older now, and he's doing a lot more, but the information is still there for people to research. So on YouTube, Thomas Frank or Ali Abdaal. There's another lady on YouTube. It's Elizabeth Phillip, F-I-L-L-I-P, Elizabeth Phillip. She is also a medical student in England, and she also has a lot of resources for students. So those are three people that I highly recommend to look at their videos to becoming a better student.
Okay. Well, listen, this is we've reached the hour, and I knew this was going to happen because, you know, you're like, how long do we go? I'm like, it's an hour, and it's going to fly by. And I think you've been great. And listen, if we need to do another one of these podcasts, I'm kind of glad that we did this today, is because really the FAFSA is...
There are two deadlines.
Two deadlines.
Before October 1st.
Before October 1st.
One is the FAFSA.
Okay.
I'm sorry, it's not a deadline. It's the start of FAFSA.
Right.
FAFSA season is here. Collect all your information and get on the FAFSA website and start putting your information in.
Okay.
If you want me to look at that before you send it, don't hit the submit button. Email me, contact me, and I will be glad to help you go over that FAFSA form to make sure that there's no mistakes on it.
Okay.
The second thing is raise.me, this micro scholarship website.
Okay.
October 1st is the deadline for seniors, not juniors, sophomores, freshmen, for seniors to sign up and go back to when they were freshmen and enter all their information in. And there's up to $80,000 in scholarships waiting for them on that site. If they take it as a part-time job, if the student takes it as a part-time job, they can get up to $80,000.
So that ends on the 1st?
No.
Or it starts?
The for raise.me,
raise.me,
the sign-up deadline for seniors is October 1st.
Sign up. So you need to sign up.
You need to sign up before October 1st.
Before October 1st. That's like a couple days, people.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate this. This has been fun. I get excited when I talk about it. I keep on telling people, you know, I'm having more fun now than I've ever had in my life talking to people, because this is a stress-relieving, anxiety-relieving process. And I love taking that stress on.
I tell you what, Bob, this door is open for you anytime. You got something going on, if there's a deadline coming, we need to get the word out. Anything that helps students and parents get through this college transition easier, please don't hesitate. It's not a big deal to sit down and chat for an hour.
Well,
if we can help
that.
Some people, let's do it next year for sure. Let's do it earlier. Maybe we'll start like 1st of September and try to. And maybe I'll learn a little more, and I can be provide more helpful
great.
Questions.
Yeah, love to do that.
Yeah, and hopefully my kid will be at a school next year, and everything. Believe me, I'm going to post this on my Facebook. We'll get all.
Maybe what we could do is we could have another conversation after we do your report.
Okay. Absolutely. Please.
Okay.
Yep. Anything I can do to help, I love
Good.
It. All right, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, brother.